Hey, we were talking about a tribe member had coronavirus and was on a ventilator or wasn't looking good or whatever. And we were all very, very worried about him. And then we got news, I think Friday or Thursday, that he was off the ventilator and he's on the phone right now. Hungry Man.
Good morning, everyone.
It's morning.
Great to wake up and hear your voice.
I got to tell you, it's great to hear your voice right now.
Great to have you.
Unbelievable process that I cannot believe that what I've been through. And I woke up off the ventilator and was able to go on my phone and see all the messages. And I had a bunch of messages that you guys reached out and said some prayers for me and my wife. And I can't thank you guys enough. My wife still needs a prayer. She's still on the ventilator. Tomorrow, maybe 14 days. But I can't thank the staff at Yale New Haven Hospital, the ICU unit, the ER unit. These people are everyday heroes. Saved my life. It's tough not to get emotional, but this is real stuff, people. This thing came out of nowhere and kicked both my wife and myself down. And we ended up in the hospital on the same day, but different hospitals. There were no rooms for her, so she ended up at St. Rayfield's. I cannot thank the ICU staff and everybody at Yale. Very professional. Did everything they can to keep me comfortable. And I was on the ventilator for 10 days.
10 days.
16 days total in the hospital.
Wow.
And I got home on Saturday, so I have to self-quarantine for 14 days.
How are you financially? Are you going to be able to do that?
I have no, you know, Chaz, I at this point in time, I don't know. I just want to make sure my wife gets through it.
Yeah, I thought about that after I said it. You know, after you come close to a near-death experience and you're still worried about your wife, you're probably not worried about the money part of it yet.
Yeah.
You know, especially now with how many people affected, everybody out of work. And the true, another big hero in this thing is my poor daughter. She's the only child. Both parents on ventilators suffering from this thing.
She couldn't go see you, right?
No, she couldn't. I mean, she's in Florida, and she's a brand new mom. She has an 11-week-old baby. So we're brand new grandparents too.
And we've only
seen the baby once.
Your birthday?
My 52nd birthday was March 31st, and I was on the ventilator. And my wife, yep. And I didn't even know my wife was on the ventilator. She dropped me off at the ER, and a couple hours later, she felt horrible and called an ambulance.
Wow.
And it started off with just like, you know, I just had a headache and a fever that wouldn't go away for 3 or 4 days. And then, boom, it hit me out of nowhere where I couldn't even walk to breathe.
So she brings you to the ER. They admit you.
Well, I called the doctor. They set up one of those drive-through COVID things. So I went to the drive-thru, where they said it was going to take 5 to 7 days. I couldn't wait 5 or 7 days for the results. So I said, just drive me to the ER. But I'm here. I'm home. And I'm grateful for that. I'm just praying for her now to get better. And to put my daughter through being the only child out in Florida, having to talk to two different doctors from two different hospitals, it was just an unbelievable process. And people coming out of the woodwork, my neighbors, I come home.
You're a big dude. Do you have any underlying medical conditions?
I do have diabetes.
Okay. And that's one of the ones they list.
And I do have high blood pressure, yes.
And another one they list. It's remarkable that you came out of it.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that are coming out of it. You know, they put you on that ventilator.
10 days on the ventilator, though. That's
10 days, long time on the ventilator, yeah.
Long time on a ventilator. Now, what's the deal with your wife? What are they saying?
They're saying that, so my wife ended up getting a bacterial virus and pneumonia on top of the COVID.
Not good.
And then ended up with a blood virus of some sort. They were able to take care of that.
Man, it's amazing the stuff they can do.
So, you know, she ended up getting some things worse than me, which, you know, I'm just praying to God. They tried to take her off the ventilator yesterday. She didn't pass. They tried the day before. She didn't pass, but she did better. So hopefully she'll be off you know, every day they're trying. I have faith in them. I pray.
Joe LaChance reached out last week, and he told us that you were off the vent, and we couldn't be happier. So now we got to just put all our good thoughts into your wife and getting her off the vent.
Oh, yes, that would be much appreciated. And it wouldn't, you know, that's the reason why I wanted to call in this morning when I found out, just to give you guys a shout-out that, hey, I'm still here, and I appreciate everything that the tribe and you guys have done and said. And I also, if there's any message I can send to anybody out there, please follow the protocols that, you know, they're telling you to do, because this stuff is bad. It's taking people that are young, old. Prayers right now is what I'm looking for
you
my
got
life,
it.
Guys.
Prayers work.
We will give
all
you
right.
all that.
Yep.
All right, brother.
Take care. Thank you again.
All right, man. Hungry man. Thank you. And we're thinking about your wife.
Yeah.
Chaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Nearly 1,000 new positive COVID cases in Connecticut.
Damn.
That seems like a lot, no?
Yeah, it does.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, the word thousands in there, yes.
Are they still, are they saying we're flattening the curve?
Yes. I don't know. How big is this curve?
Yeah, it doesn't seem flat.
Try stomping harder.
Right.
Down, go, go, go,
Where's the curve? Because wouldn't it be, because we've been in the 900s every day, right? Like if we saw 800 or 700, wouldn't
that would
be
better?
That would be a curve, because you have a rise, you have a top, and then you can see it's going down. That's a curve.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Do you know what a curve is?
Right. Did anyone explain this to anybody? I'm no genius over here, but doesn't go straight up.
No rocketologist.
It curves.
No rocketologist.
A curve is a curve.
Right. And we were saying this last week. Governor Cuomo in New York was showing a curve, and you could see there's a rise, and then a bend, which that's a curve, a bend.
Right.
And then there's a downward.
The flattening.
Flattening of the curve. And then our governor will pose with a graph, and it goes straight up. And he says,
it ain't flat.
We're curving. And I'm like, show me the curve.
I have a giraffe. It's a graph, sir.
Sir, you're holding the chart upside down.
It's pointing towards me.
Oh.
It's pointing towards me.
Ow.
Pointing towards me.
Get your grapes. Get
wine.
Get some wine.
The fresh grapes.
I don't know, man.
Pumpkin.
You know, wouldn't this be the simplest thing to call someone out on? Like,
yep.
you're in the room and you're doing the press conference, like, I notice you're saying a curve here, but
where is it exactly?
Every day is about 970 cases.
Can you point
to
that curve? Why don't you draw what a curve looks like?
Wouldn't the curve be like 970 one day and 870 the next, and then 800 the next, and then you got yourself a curve.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. Just saying. I don't do that stuff.
I would say draw a curve. Let's make sure you know what a curve is.
You know.
Here's a paper and a pen.
First. Draw a curve.
Can one reporter please say, Governor, can you draw us a curve? I just want to see what your curve what looks curve like in your world.
Right? We should all be on the same page with curve.
Right. You know what I think? And we suggested this, and so we can't really complain too much. I said, whatever Governor Cuomo says, you should just come out 5 minutes after his press conference and say what he just said.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Ghetto.
And now
mm-hmm.
he's basically been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
However, you do kind of need the facts to back it up.
Right.
Like,
can't just repeat what he said. If things
what did
there,
Governor Cuomo say? He said they're flattening the curve.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Us too.
Same. Where's the flat part?
Wait.
You got Governor, you got to check first.
You check the.
You got to make sure first for you. You got to confirm.
All right.
That's what you got to do.
Same.
Mm. Yep. So 1,000 new positive COVID cases, just under 500 deaths in Connecticut, and that's a number. Unless you know someone, then it's a horrible number.
Yeah.
More than 39,000 patients have tested. So if we have 39,000 patients that have tested, and we have 11,000, they're saying almost 12,000 cases. I mean, what is that? Around 40%? That's a lot.
I was never good at that.
Wouldn't that mean for there's one in three people? It's more than one in three people.
It's about 30%, yeah.
No, it's not like one in three.
So this Chaz, this myself, this Phil.
Right. So one of us has it based on those numbers.
Oh, I ain't good.
Well, it could be Ashley.
Could be.
That's why she's home. I'm over here.
Yeah. Ashley, who hasn't showered in 7 days.
And licked the phone.
Licked the phone.
Licked the phone.
The phone licker.
I did do that, yes.
Phone licker.
There's a total of 103 nursing homes in Connecticut with at least one coronavirus case, which is just frightening.
Yep.
Yes, very.
1,593 patients have been hospitalized to date. And if you want to hear the most beautiful sound, this is really the most beautiful sound. When a coronavirus victim recovers, a lot of healthcare workers are now lining the halls and applauding as they're being rolled out.
Yep. It's a victory.
Of the ICU.
It's part of the battle.
This is from Yale New Haven. This was a patient who was very serious being rolled out of the ICU. That is really, it is really, we should be applauding them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, they're applauding their victory, you know? Look.
Yeah.
They're kicking ass.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, I definitely get that.
And you see them, they're like applauding as the person's being rolled down the hallway out those doors that move, like the opening doors.
Yeah.
The next level. Yep.
Yeah, it's great.
Yep.
Any win is a big win right now.
Yeah.
Good for them.
I have the video posted to Chaz and AJ Facebook page. You want to see it?
It's great.
Cool.
It really is great to see.
Here's the one thing I want to do, and I want to warn the healthcare workers, because you're so loved right now and being called a hero. Trust me, it only lasts a little while, and then all of a sudden, people feel the need to tear you down.
Yep, be nasty again.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, anytime we take someone and we say, they're the best.
Oh, my.
Get ready.
Yep.
Get ready.
Yep. Hopefully it doesn't happen. Like
I hope I'm wrong, but I'm just saying, in the back of your mind,
yep, just
people, you're so appreciated right now.
Right, just people are evil.
Just know what you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Take it from AJ. Just, people are evil.
Just think of the world as Facebook.
Right. It's basically correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Governor Lamont's new order to keep non-essential businesses closed until March 20th is getting a negative reaction from businesses and members of both parties. Now, I'd like to know, what does everyone feel about this? Can we do a quick town hall meeting type thing right now? If you're a business, call us. Or if you have a thought on which businesses should be open, which businesses should not be open. How do you open certain businesses? Is there a way you can roll it out slowly? What do we do?
What
right?
do we do? What we do?
Because look, I would say, well, they got it figured out over there.
Nah.
But you would know that's not true.
Don't know what the curve is.
Right? And sometimes you think, well, we couldn't possibly come up with a better idea just opening up the phones. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Totally possible.
Oh, whoa.
There's some geniuses out there.
I would say chances are we'll have a better idea here in the next 20 minutes.
Yep.
Matt Ritter, he is the House Majority Leader. Mm-hmm. I typically read whatever he says and then just want to, you know, vomit.
There you go.
But I thought he had a good point here.
Really?
He said it's time for legislative leaders to develop requirements and metrics for businesses to reopen. For instance, maybe hair salons could reopen at limited in-shop capacity or even exclusively for younger clients, less at risk. Yeah, it's just an idea. Like we should we start throwing ideas out there, or should we say, did you just hear a hungry man? Should we just shut this friggin' place down?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you read Ritter's statement, it basically says, I need a haircut.
Yeah, maybe I could go get a haircut.
Exactly right. I need a haircut. I need a trim.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Maybe I could get a haircut.
Right. What do you think? Haircuts are...
Right, you know, like...
I'm a little flabber in the middle. Maybe the gym.
Flat. Flat.
I need a flattening of the hair.
Flat my hair.
Maybe the gym, too, yeah.
1-877-764-2535 if you have a thought on when things should open again. Alan Shelton.
Yeah, how you doing? Good morning, guys. Love your show.
Thank you, brother.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, I have an opinion on the corona. First of all, I don't think we're ready to open up the economy in Connecticut specifically. I think the numbers are still climbing off the charts. But if you do open the economy, my question is, what do you do? Do you have people, some people wear masks, other people don't wear masks? I don't see them just opening up the economy and say, hey, everybody, you can go outside and go about your business.
Maybe masks required for any place that opens up. Then you have to wear, they have to wear.
The problem with that is first responders might not be able to get the masks. Oh, they need them more.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But I know what you're saying. Right. Yeah. So masks. Write it down, right? Uh-huh. Question mark. What do we do? Should everyone have masks and gloves?
Right.
Right?
And how do you enforce it? How do you enforce it anyways?
No glove, no love.
Say, hey, you know what? If you go out, you have to wear a mask. How do you enforce it?
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
No mask, don't ask.
No, but it's a difficult thing that we've never faced before. So now we have to sit and think about it because we can't just say, well, you know, do what we did last week.
Yeah.
Well, we've never done it. So now how do we open it up? There's, you know, unless someone came out and said there's truckloads of vaccine on its way to Connecticut.
Right. Yeah.
Right. We have to figure out a creative way to do this. We can't just sit and wait until there's a vaccine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, great show, guys.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Rich in Waterbury.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rich.
First thing, quick. The governor just listens to what everybody else says. The other governors, it goes along with it. So here's another. If it was a Republican governor, they'd be ready to hang him right now. Number two is I think they should open up at least the gyms and let maybe half people go in there, keep the distance, so that way you can get some exercise. They're letting people go in grocery stores, so what's the difference? The grocery store.
You're speaking AJ's language now.
I miss the gym so bad.
I'm an avid workout guy, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. You know, get out a little bit, get some exercise instead of walking down the road, and just let
run down the road. It's too soon.
I actually say it's too soon.
Yeah, instead of
walk. How come they can go in the grocery stores then? They're packed.
Because you need food.
Maybe, but like personal.
Okay, well, the people need exercise too.
But see, here's the thing with exercise. I understand your and AJ's thought on this, but you could do push-ups and sit-ups, and you could run in place, and you could run in a park. Mm-hmm. There are ways to exercise
jumping jacks
where you don't need a gym.
There are alternative options.
Or you have like appointments. You can go to the gym and use it for a half an hour under supervision, like one person per time. I don't know. It's a thought.
Right.
They can open up to some like
one person per section.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but then they have to go through and clean it.
Yeah, well, someone comes and cleans it. Meanwhile, the gym's open. There's an employee working to clean it.
Yeah,
I guess so. Maybe I'm jumping the gun, but I'm just saying maybe start, not just that too, but
all right, well, we're just thinking over here, all right?
I just want to get back to working out, that's all. I spent a lot of time in there, man, right?
Yeah. I'm with you.
Chaz
and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, nearly 1,000 new COVID cases in Connecticut, just under 500 deaths. 1,593 patients have been hospitalized. More than 39,831 patients have been tested. And there are a total of 103 nursing homes in Connecticut with at least one case of coronavirus, which is frightening.
Wow.
Very scary.
Senator Blumenthal will be on the show in 30 minutes. If you have any questions, we'll make a post. You can post them there because the phones usually get pretty busy. And then Governor Lamont will be on the show tomorrow at 8:30. Lots of questions for him. This is one of those stories, AJ. If we were still doing Loser of the Week on Friday, this would be my pick at this point in the week.
Okay.
And this person is the reason why the rest of us are hesitant to help strangers.
Hmm.
to tell the story, we're going to bring on Trooper First Class with the Connecticut State Police, Christine Jeltema. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So what happened?
So as I was told, there was a gentleman who was driving on Route 8 in Shelton and crashed his car. It rolled several times, and a couple bystanders got out and helped pull him out of the vehicle. And the operator, who was uninjured, got into one of the bystanders' car and took off and went into Shelton and ended up crashing the car that he stole in Shelton.
Ugh.
So a guy has an accident.
Right.
People stop and help.
Right.
And his way of thanking those people
he takes their
is
car.
To steal.
Steal their car.
Steal a car.
And and wreck that one, too.
Then he wrecked that one.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yep. So from what I'm told, Shelton PD is investigating the one in Shelton, obviously, but there are serious injuries. However, they're non-life-threatening. So serious injuries could be something like they're not able to walk again or something along those lines. Yeah.
Very serious.
Yeah. Very serious, yeah.
Holy
but he'll
cow.
Live. He'll live, yeah.
Wow. So. Wow.
What a jerk.
What do you do with someone like this, really?
Well, you
shoot him. Yeah,
I feel like we take these people and we test out the potential coronavirus vaccines on
them. Dango, say yes.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. Like test line them up. Line them up.
It's affecting their mental stability.
Right.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Well, so there will be charges pending. He obviously did steal a car. And depending on what the trooper does or even Shelton PD and how they investigate the motor vehicle accidents, there could be pending charges with that as well.
The original rollover, was that because he was being chased by police or no?
No, it was just an accident. And it happens, especially, you know, we're finding that the less cars that are on the road, those people that still like to drive distracted or speed, any of those types of things are, there's no more traffic to slow them down or to, you know, make them pay attention. So as much as our accidents have gone down because there's less people out on the road, we're finding that our more serious ones are pretty much the same as they are from last year.
Some real doozies out there, yeah.
So the person who may or may not be paralyzed, is this the good person or the not so good person?
Then the person that stole the motor vehicle.
Oh.
The two bystanders, the two bystanders are fine. Yeah, they weren't injured at all in any of this.
Well, there's some good news in all that.
It's called trauma, yeah.
And how are you doing? Everyone good? Connecticut State Police?
Yeah, we're doing good. Yes, we're doing good. We're getting along with everybody else, so trying to do the best that we can.
No fights today.
No fighting.
I wish we could say that here.
Right. That's normal for us, though.
Well, thank you for the work that you're doing. We really appreciate you all.
Thank you, and you guys, too. Keep it up.
You, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Trooper First Class Christine Jeltema. See? She's doing all the hard work. She's like, you guys too. I was like, No.
Stop.
You know, when you have to put on a gun every morning to go into work because your customers might bring this out in you.
Right.
Yeah. That's serious.
I mean, not only are you putting on a gun, but you're putting on three extra clips.
Right.
Just in case it gets really unruly.
And that's the grocery store.
And you're putting on a bulletproof vest.
Right. In the summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's got to suck.
Because the people that you're, some of them.
You know? Just.
Really? Really? I have a certain appreciation for those people.
We lost words.
Can't thank them enough. All right, let's talk to, here's another group of people we can't thank enough, right? The Uber Eats people.
Yes, thank you. Get the food.
Monica from Bridgeport works for Uber Eats and Instacart. So you do both simultaneously, or you'll sign on to one, then sign on to the other? How does that work?
Actually, I can be signed into both at the same time. Both are, where Uber Eats will send us jobs directly when we're in the area. Instacart is now doing it with a bucket where we can go in and grab a job, you know, as they pop up.
Gotcha. Were you doing this before coronavirus, or you signed up because of it?
I've been doing Instacart for 2 years and Uber Eats for about a year and a half.
Okay.
And what's the swing in business been?
Well, so Instacart is obviously, as you can imagine, very busy, but it's becoming less lucrative because we're having to wait outside in long lines. They're not providing us, although they're going to now, haven't provided us anything for protection. So it's on us so far to be buying our own equipment, gloves, masks, you know, hand sanitizer. Same thing with Uber Eats. I would say that Instacart is giving us bigger tips, but there have been situations where people are increasing the tips, which we can see in advance, and then zeroing them out after we deliver.
That is rotten. Oh. That is rotten.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If I see a big tip, I'm thinking, this person needs it. They really appreciate it. I'm getting this job done first.
Right.
And then you go there and they zero that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Instacart is where this is the grocery shopping right. one, right? So do you have to go through? Do you have to go through the market and pick the stuff off the shelves, or is there a basket ready for you?
No, we actually do the shopping. So
wow.
We're picking the apples, and then they have 3 days to change the tip, and it has happened. I'm not going to say often, but yeah,
has happened.
That's nuts.
Gotcha.
Nuts. And what? Besides the amount of calls, have you had any other challenges?
So the challenges are more with Uber Eats, I would say. I pretty much will drive up and down between Fairfield and Milford. They're not supplying us any, they're not giving us any supplies at all, and the pay has not changed. And so when everybody's going to McDonald's, everyone has to go through the drive-thru now. We can't go in and get, we used to be able to go in and pick it up.
Right.
So I might be in a line of 10 deep waiting to pick up an order that's going to pay me $3.50, like $3.50.
Right.
Because McDonald's is, usually closed.
Yeah.
So the lines are really long. A lot of the restaurants that were big stopping points for us are closed. They're not even open the shorter hours. And there hasn't been an influx of new restaurants. You would think restaurants would jump on the bandwagon and want to stay open and have business. That's not happening at all.
I'm surprised by that.
And then there's been a lot of crime in a lot of the areas that I would normally work. There was a robbery at one of the places. There has been some shootings and some carjackings, and so it's a little bit more difficult to be an Uber Eats driver, but the restaurants are really taking a lot of precautions. We're waiting outside. Everybody's got gear on. So from that perspective, I feel very safe picking up as far as from the restaurant, but then there's some other challenges.
Other challenges being dropping off the food and not getting mugged?
Well, it is happening. there is a lot of crime in the areas that I would normally I do go to a lot of different areas that are, different.
Yeah, so you're different. I love you. You're great.
Very polite.
I'm trying to be polite.
Right.
Yeah. You go into some tough areas.
Right. That works.
Yeah. I don't really worry about it because I'm not carrying any money with me. But when there's, when I see the reports and I'm like, oh, man, I take that street to get over to, Andro's Diner or, something like that, then... and there's a carjacking, I'm going to be worried that I'm at the stop sign going there,
Yeah, and someone might just take your car.
Exactly, right. And all the food in it.
Yeah.
Well, there's exactly. that, too. Yeah. Has anyone ever tried to or successfully robbed you of your food or groceries?
Yeah, no.
Mm-mm. Good. Knock on
Thank
wood.
Thank goodness. Yep,
exactly
yeah.
right. Knocking.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to worry about it.
No, you'd be good. You've been making all the right choices.
Yeah, you're good.
Have you ever, so when you drop off the food, you leave it on a doorstep or have people yelled outside, don't come up to my door, leave it at the step.
6 feet
Don't
away.
Don't come near me.
Go
six
away.
Feet, 6 feet.
Sack, right, sack.
We get a lot of messages. People can text us through the app. For Uber Eats. So a lot of times they'll just direct us to leave them on the doorstep. Now that's all I do. I tell them, I'm leaving this here
you
and
dictate.
I'm in your driveway.
Or, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. With Instacart, we do only now pretty much leaving on the doorstep. That's, no contact.
That's
no
a protocol,
anything.
Yeah.
What type of food is being ordered the most?
Meat, definitely. Meat. And a lot of it.
All right, so that's Instacart, right? So meat.
Yeah.
Okay, and then for the takeout, what type of food are people ordering for takeout?
It's a variety. I mean, a lot of times Italians, like I said, the ones that really were gold mines for me at least, they're not open, like, at all.
Right.
They're temporarily shut down to protect the employees. One of them is revamping how they're doing, you know, pickup and delivery, you know, for people, so they're closed. But Italian is big, fast food, still big, you know, those are the main ones.
We have a list here from Uber Eats, wrote down each state and the number one food that's being ordered in each state.
Oh, yeah.
Would anyone like to take a guess as to what number one in Connecticut is?
I say pizza.
I would think that
Chinese,
too.
Probably.
All right. Our professional thinks Chinese, Phil.
Yeah, I was going to say pizza, but I'll say like French fries, like burger and fries.
Oh, yeah. I was going to go with fast food, like McDonald's or something.
In the country,
yeah.
French fries, number one.
Okay.
In Connecticut, burrito bowl.
Burrito bowl?
Yeah.
Burrito bowl.
All right.
I saw Taco Tuesday. And I said, what?
Where the hell did you get that?
You got us confused.
Where the hell did you get that? Burrito bowl.
Right.
Moe's.
Like Moe's?
Yeah, you go to Moe's.
Chipotle?
Maybe, yeah.
Have you delivered one burrito bowl, Monica?
No, I have. I can't say that I've.
Not one.
No, and the only Moe's closed that's in the area over here in Fairfield, I used to pick up from, they went out of business.
It was, like, one in Milford. There. I don't know if the story is.
Like such a stupid burrito bowl. I was
burrito
embarrassed.
Bowl. Right.
No,
like,
I want one.
I was like, do I have to be embarrassed for this state again? Another list I'm embarrassed of.
I like to try one.
Even the
out.
Food list?
Right. Yeah. Maybe it's good. Why don't you try one?
So what's your story, Monica? Are you a single mom? You're a young person working your way through school? What's the deal?
I am a single mom, and I work. I have a full-time job, and I do these other jobs after hours. So the other thing is the cut in hours down to, like, things closing at 8 o'clock. I mean, I would work till midnight. You know, there's a lot of loss in hours for someone like me because I can't start till, you know, 6 o'clock. So... but yeah, I'm a single mom.
Single mom and working full time and then doing this.
Yeah.
And
how, 6 days a week.
How old are your children or child?
I have a 16-year-old.
Wow. 16-year-old.
There you go, see?
Right, that's good. You can send them out to start working, too.
Exactly. Let's think of that. You're going to be the runner. Yeah, mommy's going to drive. You're going to be the runner. You're young
she
and healthy.
She missed her license appointment. She missed her license appointment because of the virus. She was supposed to go April 1st. And
darn it.
There goes the shotgun.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, well, hang in there. Thanks for coming on. And look at you,
all right, you
doing the hard work. Yeah. Monica, okay. Thanks.
Stay safe.
Thank you. Have
all right.
A good day.
You too.
So nice.
What a treat.
Yeah. And she brings you food.
My mom had a really positive experience with Instacart. She said whoever did the shopping for her was really nice. They'd contact her from the store and ask her, well, I can't get this, but do you want this instead? I mean, really positive.
That's unbelievable.
That yeah, these people are
the
awesome.
The amount of time they have to spend now to do this to make $3.50 or
exactly.
whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
That Monica is...
she's like...
These are the people, you know, that get things done. She works all day, then does this. It's a good talking.
Amazing.
Over. Chaz and AJ in the morning. 99.1 PLR. Senator Blumenthal on the phone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. Thank you. Hope you had a good holiday.
Yes, and
yes.
You. How did you celebrate Easter?
Well, I was at home mostly. I went, however, with Food for the Frontlines, an organization that delivers food to the frontline healthcare workers. Visited Stanford Hospital and then St. Vincent's Hospital in Bridgeport.
That's very cool.
Wonderful healthcare workers, very inspiring, and a real win-win. You know, Food for the Frontlines buys food from the restaurants, which is a win for them, and then delivers it to the healthcare workers, which is a win-win.
We did something similar to that called Carts for Caregivers. We raised $15,000 thanks to the tribe and everyone listening to the radio station.
Yep.
And we bought restaurant
Good
gift cards
you.
And gave them to the front lines. I wish I could say
Amazing.
I thought of it, but it was our management's just been so great with this stuff.
Right.
All right, so let's get into it. If you have a question for the senator, you can call it in. 1-877-764-2535. Stimulus checks. Some folks are getting them in the mail now. So first wave went out. When second wave, third wave, when should you expect it if you haven't already?
You should be receiving these checks by the end of this week. Today's Monday, obviously. By the end of the week or early next week, they should be either in the mail or deposited into accounts. Now, I am not in charge of depositing the checks or sending them in the mail. That's the message from the IRS and the Department of Treasury, which is the agency responsible for sending them. But that's the general time frame that we've been given.
It's individual taxpayers who make less than $75,000 a year eligible for $1,200 checks. Married couples filing jointly who make less than $150,000 will get $2,400. They'll also be eligible for $500 each for each dependent child under 17. And so then it gradually goes down the more money you make. And if couples earn more than $198,000, you do not get a check. And the income amounts are based on tax returns filed for 2018 or 2019. Now, what if you filed for, let's just say 2019, had a great year, but now you're unemployed?
You still can get a check if you make that known to the IRS or to my office, because you really should deserve a check if you've encountered hard times. And anybody who's denied a check, I'd like to hear from them.
We'll link up your office information at WPLR.com and 959thefox.com. Payroll protection. This is the big one. This helps small businesses with loans to cover salaries and some expenses for like 2.5 months. How's this going? Has anyone received a check yet?
According to the CBIA and the SBA, as of last Monday, there were 1,300 approved federal loans for a total of $643 million.
That was just for Connecticut or United States?
That's just for Connecticut. For the United States, it was in the range of about $100 billion. And my guess is by now, the number for Connecticut is in excess, substantially in excess of $1 billion, and way above 1,500 federal loans. So that processing seems to be moving forward, but there have been some snafus and glitches in the program. For example, some of the banks have declined to make loans unless the applicant had a previous credit or loan history. We've talked to the big banks. Bank of America has come around. Very grateful that they've done that kind of cooperation.
Didn't we, the taxpayers, bail out Bank of America last time around?
We did, and that's one of the points that I made to them and to Wells Fargo and to others who were initially a little bit more restrictive in the way they were making loans. But frankly, Bank of America has come around, and we've talked to them. In fact, I talked to them just last week about continuing a very robust program. But
they never really help themselves when it comes to public opinion.
No.
You know, they always have to be made to do the right thing. And you would think somebody in the top office would say, you know, maybe we just do the right thing this time.
Let's try it one time.
Yeah, let's stay under the radar on this one.
Let's give it a shot.
Let's just give the loans out.
See what happens.
All right, so payroll protection.
They could use you as a corporate advisor. I'm sure they would.
They could, yes.
You know, Senator, I've been telling people I'm available for consultation for free. I have an opinion, and I'll give it for free.
Do you get a company car?
Yeah. Okay, so payroll
protection. Right.
Let me ask you this on the payroll protection. If you haven't heard back yet, should you be alarmed?
No.
Okay, so if you apply for a loan,
so
you haven't heard
applicants.
Back yet. Okay.
It's on the way.
There are so many applicants, and frankly, what we're going to have to do, Chaz, is we're going to have to put more money into this program.
Right.
You know, initially we put about $350 billion. That sounds like a huge number, but my guess is that already that number has been exhausted in terms of the applications approved. So we need to approve not just the $250 billion that Senator McConnell asked for last week, but my guess is probably more. About $500 billion, which is in some ways a good sign because it means these small businesses really are looking to the future. They want to keep people on their payroll.
They want to stay up.
They're ready to come back.
I heard at the beginning of this process that when you filled out the application, you would immediately get a $10,000 check and then the loan to come. Now, if you didn't get the $10,000 check, should you be worried that maybe your loan wasn't processed correctly?
Well, it was a different program. That's a grant program.
Okay.
Remember, about the Paycheck Protection Program involves a loan that is then forgiven if those companies or LLCs keep their
employees,
people on the payrolls. And it also can be to sole employers, in other words, single people who are contractors. But the point here is that the economic injury grant was separate. And yes, businesses can apply for that grant as well. And that also is being processed. So, you know, I have to say I'm impatient and frustrated. At the same time, I understand there's a deluge of applications. The SBA needs more resources, and I put part of the blame on federal authorities in D.C., not here. You know, you and I talked to Mark Hayward a couple of weeks ago.
It is
he's
a big,
ready, willing,
well,
and
if,
able.
If you need the money, working. It's tough.
Yeah.
You want it right now. You want it yesterday. You want it last week.
Right.
But when you think about the enormity of this program and what they're trying to do in a very short period of time, with the amount of layers of people involved.
Yeah. You have a little patience, yeah.
Right, but
it's
not
only.
It is, yeah.
You know, my heart goes out not only to the small businesses because they're putting their futures on the line, but also their employees who would like to come back to work.
And so let me talk about that here, and then we'll take a break, and then we got some phone calls for Senator Blumenthal. Unemployment, people have been having a hard time. Is this more of a Connecticut question? Because we're having a hard time getting folks on unemployment. I mean, they're being overrun, and it's taking a lot longer than it normally takes.
And the fault there is the computer system that the state has. It's antiquated, without meaning any disrespect to the folks in Hartford. And by the way, I happen to think Governor Lamont has done a really great job in leading the state. Among other governors, they've provided really steadfast leadership.
Questionable.
But frankly, they have a antiquated computer system, so it's taking weeks and sometimes months, and that really needs attention quickly, and I know that the governor is giving it attention.
All right. So that's the key
now,
there.
Now, remember, about that program, people can receive $600 more per week, which will bring them to nearly full pay, a lot of people, particularly lower income people. And so that's going to be a great boost for the economy.
And longer, right? And more weeks?
Exactly.
Okay.
4 months. 4 months, not just weeks, 4 additional months.
Senator Richard Blumenthal on the show right now. We're going to roll through some questions here being called in. John from Fairfield says, dentist's office still open. No one feels safe. Is that more of a Connecticut thing, Senator?
It is, yeah. I am not sure whether dentist's office are covered by the essential services executive order by the governor. I can check on that if John wants to give me a call.
All right, we'll grab his number.
Yeah, it is a state issue. Yep, I
gotcha.
Can call him.
Erica from Plymouth. Cosmetologist, tattoo artists allowed to make home visits. It's a big mess. That's another state issue, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Al from Milford, Texas. Wife had a baby last year after they filed taxes. Will he get that $500? Oh, that's a good question. So when he filed last year, he didn't have a child. Now he does. So there's no record of him having a child. How would he get that $500?
You know, that's a great question. And what I'd like to do is go to bat for him with the IRS. I haven't heard anyone talk about, but in my view, he deserves that $500. He has a child. And if he has the birth certificate, he deserves it.
Okay.
Phil, but can you grab the phone numbers of the folks who are calling in? Because all of these seem like
Phil can give them to me afterwards.
Perfect.
There you go. See?
Let's see. Brian and Meriden, age restriction on stimulus checks for children. Yes, 17 and under, right?
Correct.
Okay. That's a kid, yep.
Kurt in Portland, wages were already taken since January. Any plan to redistribute? I don't know what that means. Let me pick up Kurt. Kurt, what do you mean by that?
Good morning, gentlemen and morning. Ladies. How are we doing?
Good. Good.
Hi, Kurt.
How are you doing, Senator? Good morning.
Good morning, Kurt.
Let's get to it, Kurt. Come on. But you know the rules.
Yes. So the tax return, how the wages weren't getting taken from some people, but it was only on the 17th or whatever, or the 23rd. I'm wondering if that's going to get rectified back to January 1st, so everybody has the right to get their money they were entitled to for their tax return, because my wages were already taken due to student loans, and I'm just wondering if that's going to be retroactive back to the 1st, or if people that filed their taxes earlier are already just out of luck.
Kurt, if you want to give Phil your phone number, I will try to answer that question. I believe the answer is yes, but I don't want to mislead you. I'll check on it and give you a call.
Perfect. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, let me put you on hold. Let me grab Nancy.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you? So there's a lot of family in healthcare who are out there, and they're in, you know, really uncomfortable positions with their job. And I think the stimulus checks are great, especially a lot of help. But my question is, these, you know, my family, I'm sure a lot of other nurses, they're the ones out there really risking a lot with this. And it doesn't, and, you know, they make over the $75,000 a year.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
With right. their places. So it doesn't seem like anything's put, you know, set that they're getting a bonus at the end of this. It
right.
doesn't, you know, other than they're getting meals, and which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But we're getting $1,200, but they're not getting any type of bonus. They're through work, through the government, through anything. And
all right, so that's a good question. What do we do for the frontline workers that are making over the money?
That is a great question. Here's what I propose, Nancy, and I'd like to make it part of the next relief package, which we hope we'll do by the end of the month or beginning of May. I've proposed something called a Heroes Fund, which would provide $25,000 as not a bonus, you know, it's kind of like hazardous duty pay
wow.
for the frontline healthcare workers, but also the police and the firefighters. They're going into really tough situations. They're breaking up, you know, fights or whatever in households. They are doing their job, even though they're putting their families at risk as well. But you guys are the heroes. And that's why not only myself, but others in the United States Senate have proposed this idea of the Heroes Fund. And, you know, it could be $25,000. I'm not wedded to the amount, but you're absolutely right. You folks are risking everything, and you deserve a recognition of the sacrifice that you've been making. Some of the health workers.
So, Senator, what can we do? And then I'm going to get to a couple more questions, but I think this is an important question. The frontline healthcare workers making over 75 not getting a stimulus check. So you're going to propose a bonus for them.
Exactly. Bonus, hazardous duty pay. You can call it whatever you want.
Right.
Heroes Fund.
Heroes Fund.
Gotcha.
Love it. All right,
that's
Nancy.
Great. And I think to mention, and yeah, absolutely, like the firefighters and that's great. And, you know, let's not forget the workers that go in, like the Frontier Optimum, you know, they have to go in. My boyfriend works.
Wow, you're pitching everyone here, Nancy.
Yeah, really?
All right, let's
well,
take the first,
you know,
one as a win.
He works for an HVAC company. You've got to go into apartment buildings. It's gross.
Yeah, no, so, it's
good point,
let's
Nancy.
Keep in mind the little guys, too.
All right, Nancy, thank you very much. Thank you for what you're doing.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, you too. Phil, grab the phone number for Alan Milford. He had a great question for the senator. All right. And then we've had a number of comments on our Facebook page, Senator, that says that you voted against the stimulus. Is that true? And they want to know why.
I voted. I was a champion for every one of the stimulus bills.
Right.
You know, the $8.3 billion first stimulus bill, the $100 billion second stimulus bill, and the most recent $2.2 trillion stimulus bill. Just so you understand, these bills were all bipartisan.
Yeah.
Every one of them voted overwhelmingly. The last one was unanimous.
Yeah, I didn't. I read the comments and I thought, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but my recollection has been you voted yes for all of them. So, Senator Blumenthal, thank you for coming on the show. Keep us posted.
I will. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Spanish flu and coronavirus. What's the difference? What's the same? Chaz and AJ in the morning. 99.1 PLR. 95.9 The Fox. Kevin Estella, professional survival instructor and author on the show now. Run us through it, brother.
All right. So I think another thing that we have to think about with Spanish flu versus the coronavirus is, again, how to think, not what to think. When we're looking at dealing with any pandemic or essentially with any conflict in our life, any fight, I mean, everything from a backwoods brawl, you know, backyard brawl to fighting a global pandemic, there's only really three factors that we have to consider, and that's force, timing, and space. So if we think about force, timing, and space, we can understand how the coronavirus can eventually be dealt with and what we're currently doing, and then also how we effectively were able to tackle the Spanish flu. So if we think about Spanish flu, what was done during 1918 and the years that followed, people wore masks. If we look at the historical photos, the primary source photos, we see people not even wearing protective gloves because that wasn't known yet that it could be spread that way, or there was a shortage because there was a rubber shortage during World War I. At the time, there weren't any immunizations, there weren't any vaccinations for it. So it's very much like it is right now, where we don't have that force multiplier. We can't simply give a vaccination or an immunization and deal with it. So we're just left to time and space, right? We're left to socially distance. We're left to wait it out, essentially. You know, and that formula will win. But if we look at, again, 1918 and we compare it to today, they also closed playgrounds. People were being issued citations for going out in public and gathering, kind of like what we're seeing today.
How long did it take them to get to that point?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It was a couple years until they developed the vaccination for it.
No, but how long before they said, all right, the playgrounds? I know the schools, they kept in because in New York City, they felt like, well, the kids will be in the class.
Right. Probably safer.
And learning. Did you read anything about this?
Well, I'm just saying.
Right. So they're in a class learning about how to deal with the pandemic. So therefore, they'll be safer.
Right. And that specific timeline, I'm not 100% certain on. I don't want to, misquote it. But I can just say that there were different places within society that were repurposed, kind of like what we're seeing now, where, large open areas are being made into makeshift hospitals, to deal with the overwhelming numbers of people that were affected. What I think is really the underlying story here, and the more frightening thing, if you will, is not so much the effect this is going to have on us socially, but I think the economic impact is going to be staggering. We think about 1918. In 1918, just to give you an idea, like a box of cornflakes was 8 cents. A can of tomato soup was a dime. And for Ashley, who has a sweet tooth, a Hershey's bar was only 3 cents.
Nice.
Yeah, I had to get you in there. but a $1,200 stimulus check, if we were to apply the money today to then, would go a lot further than where it is today. That's something that we have to consider, too. And, the low end, the economic impact in 1918 was about 25%, right? And I just read an article in Forbes that said that coronavirus could lead to an unemployment spike of anywhere from 15% to 30% of the economy. Like, that's absolutely
I know. I try not to get
amazing.
Too wrapped up in that stuff because I look at the stock market, and it's all based on what is the story today. And right now, as soon as New York numbers started coming down, the market went wild. And they also said that this thing could be horrific and kill millions. And you know, it looks like we're doing the right thing and it's getting better.
They're lowering it, yeah.
But it seems interesting that it took us so long to get to the mask part where they're telling us to wear masks. And I think that they had a meeting way, way in the front of this and said, you know, masks would really help. But, you know, if we do that, the first responder's not going to have it. We lose them. And then the whole thing falls apart. Right. So I think they knew early that, yeah, it's better to have masks on everybody. That would help a lot. But they didn't want to, you know, have these massive shortages for the people who need them the most. Look at the Even without paper. That, they didn't. They couldn't get the masks.
Yeah, look at the toilet paper, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. That and the people that use the mask incorrectly, where they're constantly adjusting, taking it off, putting it on, putting their fingers inside the mask to adjust it over their nose.
No one knows how to use a mask.
It's like, you know what? I think it's better we just, we wait and see what happens. And if it gets worse, then we'll tell them.
Make sure the professionals get them. Or even if there's enough, then you can hand them out.
We're going to wait.
Leaving the nose out.
But that was a brutal deal, the Spanish flu, because people would die and then they'd have this like frothy red stuff come out of their mouth.
Oh,
right?
Man.
And they were like just falling in public.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. And, you know, something that I bring up because, I mean, yes, I am a full-time, you know, high school history teacher on top of being a survival instructor. You know, something I tell my students is when we hear these numbers of, let's say, 1,200 people getting infected, 25,000 being infected, 500,000 dying, you know, we have this image of what 500,000 looks like. And we tend to think of like the middle, right? We think of the average guy or the average woman, but we forget that that 500,000 number impacts the children. It impacts the elderly. And what does that actually look like when you see, you know, children dying and elderly dying and healthy, able-bodied men and women otherwise that are now affected by something like Spanish flu or coronavirus. So, you know, that's something that we have to remember, that it's very similar to Spanish flu in that respect, in that, you know, we are all potentially vulnerable to this.
It's scary.
It's so true about the numbers. Like, it's so easy to just see it and just like, oh, that's a number.
Right.
You have to put a face to each one of those numbers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see faces now.
Well, you put one face, and then you draw 100 lines out to the community they were in and the people that they touched.
Their family.
Sprites, yeah.
But here we are now. How long, what are we, 4 weeks into this self-quarantine, right?
Thereabouts,
right? And then we're going to go now to May 20th. People are ready to get out.
Yeah.
People are ready to move.
Yeah.
People are ready frustrated. To say, look, I'll take my chances. You know, we got to get this thing moving. And there's this very difficult equation. How do you factor in human life and economic stability of the country? Like if this thing goes off the rails,
yeah,
it's going to be bad for everybody. Right. Mm-hmm. So the math is going on now. Did they have any of that back in 1918?
I haven't read up on anything in terms of weighing the cost benefit of returning to work. But again, it was a wartime economy.
Right.
They had to go to work. They had to go to work in order to fight the war.
Yeah.
You know, so what is the fight that we're in right now? We were riding a fantastic economy leading up to this. Yes, there were some pockets of instability around the world with North Korea, Iran, and so forth. But we weren't on a global scale fighting for, you know, freedom internationally. So yeah. That's something that, again, apples and oranges.
Well, a vaccine would be great.
That'd be awesome.
Can you work on that, Kevin?
Yeah, please.
You're smart. No, you're smart people.
Let's go.
I'm a history teacher, not a science teacher. So
make history.
Call up your science teacher friends and
make
say,
history.
Can,
come
you,
on.
Can you work on a vaccine?
The guy who builds a volcano.
Tell him we said so.
Yeah.
They know us.
Tell him.
Yeah. All right. 101 skills you need to survive in the woods. Kevin Estella, professional survival instructor and author and history teacher. So thanks for all those things. Thanks for coming on, brother. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me, and thank you to all the parents that are picking up the slack for where we can't be the teacher for your kids. Appreciate all of you guys, and trust me, the teachers want to be back in front of the classroom, in front of your students, so hang
really?
In there, guys.
Well, a couple don't.
He does.
It's a couple.
100%.
Come on, don't you love to have the mute option? Just, I'm going to turn the sound off on this.
So to be completely honest, like, listen, you know, teaching is fantastic. I didn't get into teaching to become a multimillionaire. I truly enjoy seeing, you know, young people learn and getting that genuine aha moment, like they get it and you see them become a better version of themselves every single day.
I'm still waiting for that.
And it sucks not being in front of these kids. Like, I don't have any kids of my own, but I consider 110 of my students at the high school my kids for the year. That's I call them my baby birds, you know, and I'm their mama bird.
Oh, you want to watch them fly. It's a metaphor.
No. He spits worms out of his mouth.
All right, Kevin, we'll talk to you soon. You know what?
Yeah, sounds good, guys.
All right, thank you, brother. He's the good teacher. He's the teacher that you wanted.
Yep.